Speaking of fantastic, Fire and Gasoline is a new album by Canadian metal queen Lee Aaron, featuring Sean Kelly, a personal friend of mine, on guitar. Gotta love when that happens. Let's get right into it. Here is Lee Aaron. We are speaking with Lee Aaron about Fire and Gasoline, the new album. Lee, always a pleasure, especially to have new music from you. So let's get right into this.
Sure.
The first new album in 11 years, the first rock album in 20 years. I guess the obvious question is, what took so long?
I've been asked that a few times so far. Well, the reason it's taken me 11 years to actually produce and create new work and get it out there is that 11 years ago, I had a child. I became a mom. And then 9 years ago, I became a mom again. So I've been busy, you know. And it's funny, you know, I think that I had this crazy idea in my head because I'd always been, you know, I used to joke around and call myself the hardest working woman in the music industry because I was sort of on a treadmill of writing, recording, and touring for years and years and years. And I had this crazy idea that I was going to have my baby and that my baby would just fit into my crazy rock and roll life or my crazy, you know, musical life, and I would just take her with me anywhere I needed to go. She would just fit in with my life. And then I ended up with a baby that screamed all the way to Shoppers Drug Mart, you know, in her car seat. And I went, oh my gosh, this is not working out how I thought. And so I had to make a lot of adjustments. Mind you, I don't regret that in the least. I mean, it was, you know, I just feel like it was the absolute most amazing thing that ever happened to me was becoming a parent. But I had to make some real big adjustments. And one of them was, you know, your life gets kind of small for a while. So, but now that they're a little bit older, and a little more independent, some time and sort of space and creative energy, creative space in my head has opened up because it's not all focused on, you know, it takes a tremendous amount of creative energy to raise kids, right?
So, don't I know? Yeah. My son's 9, my daughter is 12, and so we had kids at around the same age or the same kind of time frame, and
we're living parallel lives.
Yep.
You know, I remember that. Well, even now, you know, if I get a song idea, I got to tell you, iPhone memo feature, man, it has become my very best friend because it's just so busy and noisy around my house all the time. It's like I get an idea lands in my head and I'm like, I grab my iPhone and I run to the bathroom and I lock myself in there. And, you know, I'm like, la, 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 and I'm singing this idea into my iPhone and the kids are banging, Mom, what are you doing in there? I need help with my homework. Or where's my clean track pants? You know what it's like.
Oh, absolutely. It's a busy existence. One interesting fact with Fire and Gasoline is that it's the first album in your career that's being released sort of simultaneously in the United States. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about that because Canada, especially in the 80s, seemed to have had two boxes where we put artists in. You know, Gowan, Honeymoon Suite, Brighton Rock, Lee Aaron, we stuck in the Canada-only box, and then Bryan Adams and Triumph and Rush, we stuck in the international box. Why do you think the Canadian industry was like that, where we sort of kept some as homegrown secrets?
All I can really tell you, it had to do with, it was political, and it had to do with the type of contract that you signed. You know, when I signed my deal with Attic Records, and like, I'm not saying anything negative about anybody. It was the deal that I signed. It was the advice I was given at the time, and I thought that I was doing the right thing. But when I signed that deal, I signed away my foreign licensing rights. So if I was going to be released territorially in any other countries in the world, it was up to Attic Records, them to negotiate that deal and find a distribution partner in other territories. And quite often what happened is, you know, for instance, I know that there was with Attic and like with all, I have, you know, great things to say about Al Mayer. He was a astute businessman.
Absolutely.
He did the very best he could for his company. But at one point in time, he was trying to open up Attic America. And so he didn't want to give his premier acts away to an American label, even though there was interest for some of us at that time, because he wanted us to be the leading acts on the label when Attic America opened up. Unfortunately, that never happened. And then sometimes a Canadian label would be wanting distribution for their entire roster instead of one particular artist where there was interest. So there was a lot of politics involved with why some of us never ended up having success over the border. And it's not really anybody's fault. It just is what it is, right? And
right. It was the business, you know, and that's how it was set up. Do you have any regrets at that? Do you think that maybe you could have had I don't want to say a bigger career, because you've had a great career, but you know what I mean? Do you think that you could have been a more common name in London, England, had they not done it this way?
Well, I was. That's the thing. So, I was one of the few artists of that bunch, the Honeymoon Suites, the Gowans. I had a fairly successful career in Europe and the UK.
Right.
Like I had releases. I had releases in almost every country in the world except the USA. I had releases in Germany, Austria, Switzerland, Spain, Italy, Belgium, the UK. I'm just trying to think of Scandinavia, Japan. So yeah. I had, sorry, someone's calling my call waiting right now. I don't know who, but I don't have regrets. I mean, I'm not that type of person. I'm not the type of person that walks around in my life harboring, you know, ill will or resentment for things that, you know, or bitterness towards things that didn't go my way in the past. Had I had a release in the States, which we came very close to getting, actually before I signed my deal in Canada on Attic on the Metal Queen album, we had showcased in LA at the Troubadour, and we had Geffen and a few other labels that were quite interested in us. Just a bizarre set of circumstances at the time. My Canadian manager at the time had spoken to Eddie Loeffler, which was Van Halen's manager, about the idea of entering into like a management co-partnership for me for the U.S. Ed had gotten on a plane a couple days after our showcase down there, and he said, "You're going to be getting calls." He said, "Don't negotiate anything. Wait for me to get back. I have to go do some Van Halen business in London, and I will," he said, "make them sweat, make them wait a bit." And sure enough, the next day at our hotel, there were lots of phone calls, and my manager at the time was fielding them all. Ed went over to England, and I don't know if you care about this much detail, but I'm telling you.
Anyway, I love it. It's great stuff.
Yeah. So he slipped on some ice. It was December, and he threw his back out, like ruined some discs in his back, and he ended up laid up in the hospital over there for like 3 months. And what ended up happening is in that 3 month time frame, we had done Metal Queen on spec at Phase One Studios in Toronto, and the studio was breathing down our neck because they wanted their like $40,000, and we didn't have it. And so my manager at the time, well, I guess he felt he did what was best, but he kind of panicked because we had to pay this debt off, and Attic was offering a deal. And so we signed with Attic. And, you know, truthfully, I was a kid. I didn't really know what was a good deal or a bad deal or what foreign licensing even meant, you know, at that time. I think I was 19 years old.
At that age, you're like the rest of us. You just sort of, and it sounds cliche, but you just want to rock all this other stuff.
Exactly. I just thought the epitome of being a rock star was being able to headline at the Gasworks, you know?
In Toronto, yeah.
Exactly, you know, so.
I want to go, you know, we're talking about the new release, Fire and Gasoline, but I want to go back to the very, very first project, the Lee Aaron project, when you were hired and you took on the name of Lee, and you had, you know, Rick Santers on there, Rick Emmett, Moxie guys. Talk to me about that album, because that was sort of a who's who of Canadian rock royalty, and you sort of came out of nowhere and became the voice to it. How did that project come together, and how did you get involved?
Well, it's interesting that you are framing it the way that you are, because no one's ever said that to me before. I had my very first manager out of Toronto, you know, was a fairly connected man. And so at that time, and, you know, some choices that were made for me at the time, I think some were good and some were not good. But that album was, I was, basically I had just graduated from high school. And he had seen my initial high school band playing at a band shell in Brampton, Ontario. I think it was the Ching Choosey Park there. That was our big gig of the summer. And, you know, again, we were kids, and he was like, you know, I'm this, you know, big Toronto manager, and I want to sign you. And we were like, man, this is our big break, you know. So we signed with him, and within a matter of months, my entire band was fired, and various things had gone on. He'd put us on the road. He was trying to get me to hone my craft, and he brought me out front because initially the stages of Lee Aaron, I wasn't even the lead singer. I shared vocals with the guitar player, and I played some keyboards and saxophone on stage, believe it or not. But anyway, so to make a long story short, he's like, you know, you need to make a record. And so he basically put those people around me. He had Rick Santers write and co-write with me. I co-wrote with Rick. Frank Soto wrote me a song. I'm trying to think of who else. We pulled out a couple of covers. And anyway, basically, that album was sort of orchestrated around me. So they were his connections. And I was, again, a really young girl, but I was absolutely thrilled to be able to be working with these real notable Canadian players. It was a pretty great experience for me.
Yeah, it was a fantastic experience and a great album. You know, being a great fan of Alice Cooper, I sort of see this where you took on the name of Lee Aaron and became sort of this. Did you ever sense that when you were hit on stage and be there as Lee Aaron, that you were a persona and that Lee Aaron had to be a certain image and a certain something? Or, I mean, is it like an Alice Cooper kind of situation?
Well, I had come from theater, and a lot of people don't know that, right? I had come out of the theater scene. So for me, I'll tell you a funny little story. Again, my first manager, when I just entered into this industry, he's like, you know, you got to get your stage persona together. And, you know, because I just sort of stood there at the mic, kind of shy, singing. And I mean, I still had the same voice, but I didn't have any stage moves. I didn't really know how to, you know, manipulate a microphone stand or relate to an audience that well. And he took me to see The Rose with Bette Midler. Do you remember that film?
Yeah, absolutely. That was 1979, I believe.
And he was like, wow. He says, you know, he said, do that. That's what I want you to do. So initially, I think in the beginning, it was more of a persona, more acting for me. I sort of embraced it like that, that this is a role that I'm playing, this hard rockin' babe out there. You know, obviously not as, you know, Alice takes it, you know, 8,000 steps further with, you know, to the point of, right, you know, having a snake and a guillotine on stage. Actually, I shouldn't say that I had a snake in a video, but but certainly over the years, you know, it's not something that has really continued for me. It's, you know, I've grown into my own professional skin, if that makes any sense.
Right.
Yeah.
When you do a show these days, and it's a Lee Aaron show, is it just you, or is it still like, all right, let me get my sort of rock star suit on and let's go do this?
Well, anyone who tells you that they don't put their rock star suit on and go do this is totally lying. So, yeah, there's definitely an element of that for sure.
Absolutely,
you know.
I'm just going to go, let me get right back here to Fire and Gasoline, because we're going to run out of time in a couple of minutes.
Sure.
But it is the first rock record, like we said, in 20 years, I guess. Is that sort of, are you closing a chapter or are you opening up a new chapter? Is this something that you want to keep doing, you know, like in 2 years there'll be another one, in 5 years there'll be another one, or is it like, okay, everybody, you've wanted me to do this. I've done it. Now let me get back to doing jazz or whatever else I'm doing.
No, it's not like that at all. Okay. It's opening up a chapter. I always knew I would make another rock record, that I'd return to this at some point when I was feeling inspired to write songs of this nature again. And yeah, I really sort of feel like I'm just beginning again to do this. So I don't like to set time limits on things. Like, I don't like to say, yeah, I promise there'll be another new record for me next year, but you're definitely going to see more music from me in the future. I feel like it's opening up a new chapter, and I'm, you know, I feel like Sean and I, like Sean co-wrote five songs with me for the album. I wrote the other six on my own, but I feel like I've actually never recorded an album where I completely, a solo had written the majority of the record. And I feel like, I don't know, like this whole new creative avenue is opening up for me at this point, and where, and it's more pure than I think it's ever been. So it's really exciting for me.
Do you need to separate the two, I don't want to say two careers, but does doing rock from now on preclude or exclude doing the jazz stuff? Or do you just want to go wherever it's going to be and I'll just do what feels right at that moment?
It's not, you know, when I was doing jazz, I think a lot of people didn't, you know, people that, you know, sometimes what happens with rock fans is they just go, we're in this camp or we're in that camp. And,
right,
you know,
absolutely,
we're rock fans, so we can't like your jazz. But I had a lot of rock fans that loved the jazz I was doing because, and when I say jazz and blues. It's, I did a lot of blues numbers in my set that I have actually been able to translate into my rock set, sort of, you know, in a Jack White kind of way or a Zeppelin-esque kind of way. I mean, I think people forget, you know, that, you know, bands like Zeppelin, man, they stole from everybody. They stole from, you know, Howlin' Wolf and Willie Dixon. And this is where rock and roll came from in the first place. So for some of my jazz numbers to sneak into my rock show as heavy blues numbers is not a stretch at all.
And then Sean Kelly, we mentioned him in passing. Yeah. I've known Sean personally for 15, 20 years. What was it like having him in the band and having him write with you? Because he is just an incredibly, incredibly talented guitarist.
He, you know what? I, for years and years, since John Albany left my band, since we parted ways, he started a studio in Nashville and wanted to be a producer. I have been sort of searching for somebody to fill those shoes in terms of giftedness, you know, the, you know, energy, the attitude, the, you know, talent. And when I started working with Sean, it was just like this magical thing just clicked. I was like, oh my gosh, you're like the missing piece to the Lieren puzzle, and here you are. And I think he knew that too. Like, it just was very apparent right away. And so the idea of writing together, we started talking about that pretty early on. And some of it was just bouncing iPhone memos back and forth between each other. And we actually managed to write songs that way. It was great, you know, because I'm out west and he's in Toronto.
Yeah, and he's, you know, he's great, great talent. Lee, always a pleasure to speak with you, and much success with the new album. I've heard it, and it's sounds great. It just sounds absolutely fantastic.
Well, thank you so much, Mitch. It's a pleasure talking to you.
There you go. And there you go. Thank you. And we'll do this again soon.
Absolutely. I'll remember to put on my radio voice for you.
Yeah. God forbid, right? Oh, I'm telling you, the radio voice. Yeah. Thank you. Bye for now.
All right. Take care, Mitch.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
And there you have it, folks. My interview with Canada's metal queen, Lieren. The new album is Fire and Gasoline, featuring Sean Kelly on guitar.